Cat's-Eye's boots had snapped their laces. It was as if he'd been pulled upwards so fast they simply couldn't keep up. That worried Medium Dave. So did the smell. There was no smell at all in the rest of the tower, but just here there was a lingering odour of mushrooms. His forehead wrinkled. Medium Dave was a thief and a murderer, and therefore had a highly developed moral sense. He preferred not to steal from poor people, and not only because they never had anything worth stealing. If it was necessary to hurt anyone, he tried to leave wounds that would heal. And when, in the course of his activities, he had to kill people, then he made some effort to see that they did not suffer much, or at least made as few noises as possible. This whole business was getting on his nerves. Usually, he didn't even notice that he had any. There was a wrongness to everything that grated on his bones, and a pair of boots was all that remained of old Cat's Eye. He drew his sword. Above him, the creeping shadows moved and flowed away. Susan edged up to the entrance to the stairways and peered around into the point of a crossbow.
"Now, all of you, step out where I can see you," said Peachy conversationally. "And don't touch that sword, lady. You'll probably hurt yourself."
Susan tried to make herself unseen and failed. Usually it was so easy to do that it happened automatically, usually with embarrassing results. She could be idly reading a book while people searched the room for her. But here, despite every effort, she seemed to remain obstinately visible.
"You don't own this place," she said, stepping back.
"No, but you see this crossbow? I own this crossbow. So you just walk ahead of me, right, and we'll all go and see Mr. Tea Time."
"Excuse me, I just want to check something," said Bilious.
To Susan's amazement, he leaned over and touched the point of the arrow.
"Here. What did you do that for?" said Peachy, stepping back.
"I felt it, but of course a certain amount of pain sensation would be part of a normal sensory response," said the Ogod. "I warn you, there's a very good chance that I might be immortal."
"Yes, but we probably aren't," said Susan.
"Immortal, eh?" said Peachy. "So if I was to shoot you in the head, you wouldn't die?"
"I suppose when you put it like that, I do know I feel pain."
"Right. You just keep moving, then."
"When something happens," said Susan, out of the corner of her mouth, "you two try to get downstairs and out, all right. If the worst comes to the worst, the horse will take you out of here."
"If something happens," whispered the Ogod.
"When?" said Susan. Behind them, Peachy looked around. He knew he'd feel a lot better when any of the others turned up. It was almost a relief to have prisoners. Out of the corner of her eye, Susan saw something move on the stairs on the opposite side of the shaft. For a moment, she thought she saw several flashes, like metal blades, catching the light. She heard a gasp behind her. The man with the crossbow was standing very still and staring at the opposite stairs.
"Oh, no,"
he said under his breath.
"What is it?"
said Susan.
He stared at her.
"You can see it too?"
"The thing like a lot of blades clicking together," said Susan.
"Oh, no."
"It was only there for a moment," said Susan.
"It's gone now," she said. "Somewhere else," she added.
"It's the Scissor Man."
"Who's he?" said the Ogod.
"No one," snapped Peachy, trying to pull himself together. "There's no such thing as the Scissor Man, all right?"
"Ah, yes. When you were little, did you suck your thumb?"
said Susan. "Because the only Scissor Man I know is the one people used to frighten children with. They said he'd turn up and..."
"Shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up," said Peachy, prodding her with the crossbow. "Kids believe all kinds of crap. But I'm grown up now, right? And I can open beer bottles with other people's teeth and..." "Oh, gods!"
Susan heard the snip-snip. It sounded very close now. Peachy had his eyes shut.
"Is there anything behind me?"
he quavered. Susan pushed the others aside and waved frantically towards the bottom of the stairs.
"No," she said as they hurried away. "Is there anything standing on the stairs at all?"
"No."
"Right. If you see that one-eyed bastard, you tell him he can keep the money."
He turned and ran. When Susan turned to go up the stairs, the Scissor Man was there. It wasn't man-shaped. It was something like an ostrich and something like a lizard on its hind legs, but almost entirely like something made out of blades. Every time it moved, 1,000 blades went snip, snip, snip. Its long, silver neck curved, and a head made of shears stared down at her. "You're not looking for me," she said. "You're not my nightmare." The blades tilted this way and that. The Scissor Man was trying to think. "I remember you came for Twyla," said Susan, stepping forward. "That damned governess had told her what happens to little girls who suck their thumbs, remember?" Remember the poker? I bet you needed a hell of a lot of sharpening afterwards. The creature lowered its head, stepped carefully around her in as polite a way as it could manage, and clanked on down the stairs after Peachy. Susan ran on towards the top of the tower. Sidney put a green filter over his lantern and pressed down with a small silver rod that had an emerald set on its tip. A piece of the lock moved. There was a whirring from inside the door and something went click. He sagged with relief. It is said that the prospect of hanging concentrates the mind wonderfully, but it was valium compared to being watched by Mr. Teatime.
I think that's the third lock, he said. Green light is what opens it. I remember the famous lock of the Hall of Murgle, which could only be opened by the Hubward Wind, although that was...
I commend your expertise, said Teatime. And the other four? Sidney looked up nervously at the silent bulk of Banjo and licked his lips.
Well, of course, if I'm right and the locks depend on certain conditions, well, we could be here for years, he ventured. Supposing they can only be opened by, say, a small blonde child holding a mouse on a Tuesday in the rain.
You can find out what the nature of the spell is, said Teatime.
Yes, of course.
Sidney waved his hands urgently.
That's how I worked out this one. Reverse thaumaturgy. Yes, certainly, in time.
We have lots of time, said Teatime.
Perhaps a little more time than that, Sidney quavered. The processes are very, very, very difficult.
Oh, dear. If it's too much for you, you've only got to say, said Teatime.
No,
Sidney yipped, and then managed to get some self-control.
No, I'm sure I shall work them out soon.
Jolly good, said Teatime. The student wizard looked down. A wisp of vapour oozed from the crack between the doors.
Do you know what's in here, Mr. Teatime?
No.
Ah, right.
Sidney stared mournfully at the fourth lock. It was amazing how much he remembered when someone like Teatime was around. He gave him a nervous look.
There's not going to be any more violent deaths, are there? He said. I just can't stand the sight of violent deaths.
Teatime put a comforting arm around his shoulders.
Don't worry, he said. I'm on your side. A violent death is the last thing that'll happen to you.
Mr. Teatime, he turned. Medium Dave stepped onto the landing. Someone else is in the tower, he said. They've got cat's eye. I don't know how. I've got Peachy watching the stairs, and I ain't sure where Chicken Wire is. Teatime looked back to Sidney, who started prodding at the fourth lock again in a feverish attempt not to die. Why are you telling me? I thought I was paying you big, strong men a lot of money to deal with this sort of thing. Medium Dave's lips framed some words, but when he spoke, he said, All right, but what are we up against here, eh? Old Man Trouble or the Bogeyman or what? Teatime sighed. Some of the Tooth Fairy's employees, I assume, he said. Not if they're like the ones that were here, said Medium Dave. They were just civilians. It looks like the ground opened up and swallowed Cat's Eye up. He thought about this. I mean, the ceiling, he corrected himself. A horrible image had just passed across his underused imagination. Teatime walked across to the stairwell and looked down. Far below, the pile of teeth looked like a white circle. And the girl's gone, said Medium Dave. Really? I thought I said she should be killed. Medium Dave hesitated. The boys had been brought up by Ma Lilywhite to be respectful to women as delicate and fragile creatures, and were soundly thrashed if disrespectful tendencies were perceived by Ma's incredibly sensitive radar. And it was truly incredibly sensitive. Ma could hear what you were doing three rooms away. Terrible thing for a growing lad. That sort of thing leaves a mark. Ma Lilywhite certainly could. As for the others, they had no objections in practice to the disposal of anyone who got between them and large sums of money, but there was a general unspoken resentment at being told by Teatime to kill someone just because he had no further use for them. It wasn't that it was unprofessional. Only assassins thought like that. It was just that there were things you did do and things you didn't do, and this was one of the things you didn't do. We thought, well, you never know. She wasn't necessary, said Teatime. Few people are. Sidney thumbed hurriedly through his notebooks.
Anyway, the place is a maze, Medium Dave said.
Sadly, this is so, said Tea Time, but I am sure they will be able to find us. It's probably too much to hope that they intend something heroic.
Violet and the O-God hurried down the stairs.
Do you know how to get back? Said Violet.
Don't you?
I think there's a kind of soft place. If you walk at it knowing it's there, you go through.
You know where it is?
No, I've never been here before. They had a bag on my head when we came. All I ever did was take the teeth from under the pillows.
Violet started to sob.
You just get this list and about 5 minutes training, and they even dock you 10 pence a week for the ladder. And I know I made that mistake with little William Rubin, but they should have said you're supposed to take any teeth you...
Mistake,
said Bilious, trying to get her to hurry.
Just because he slept with his head under the pillow, but they give you the pliers anyway. No one told me that you shouldn't.
She certainly did have a pleasant voice, Bilious told himself. It was just that in a funny way it grated, too. It was like listening to a talking flute.
I think we'd just better get outside, he said, in case they hear us, he hinted.
What sort of godding do you do? Said Violet.
This and that,
Bilious tried to think through the pounding headache, and then he had one of those ideas, the kind that only sound good after a lot of alcohol. Someone else may have drunk the drinks, but he managed to snag the idea.
I'm actually self-employed, he said, as brightly as he could manage.
How can you be a self-employed god?
Ah, well, you see, if any other god wants, perhaps, you know, a holiday or something, I cover for them. Yeah, that's what I do.
Unwisely in the circumstances, he let his inventiveness impress him.
Oh, yes. I'm very busy. Rushed off my feet. They're always employing me. You've no idea. They don't think twice about pushing off for a month as a big white bull or a swan or something, and it's always, oh, Bilious, old chap, just take care of things while I'm away, will you? Answer the prayers and so on. I hardly get a minute to myself. But, of course, you can't turn down work these days.
Violet was round-eyed with fascination.
And are you covering for anyone right now? She asked.
Yes, the, God of Hangovers, actually.
Oh, God of Hangovers? How awful.
Bilious looked down at his stained and wretched toga.
I suppose it is, he mumbled.
You're not very good at it.
You don't have to tell me.
You're more cut out to be one of the important gods, said Violet admiringly. I can just see you as Io, or Fate, or one of those.
Bilious stared at her with his mouth open.
I could tell at once that you weren't right, she went on, not for some horrible little god. You could even be Offler with calves like yours.
Could I? I mean, sometimes. Of course I have to wear fangs.
And then someone was holding a sword to his throat.
What's this? Said Chickenwire. Lover's Lane? You leave him alone, you, shouted Violet. He's a god. You'll be really sorry.
Bilious swallowed, but very gently. It was a sharp sword.
A god, eh? said Chickenwire. What of?
Bilious tried to swallow again.
A bit of this, bit of that, he mumbled.
Caw, said Chickenwire. Well, I'm impressed.
I can see I'm going to have to be dead careful here, eh? Don't want you smiting me with thunderbolts, do I? Puts a crimp in the day, that sort of thing.
Bilious didn't dare move his head, but out of the corner of his eye he was sure he could see shadows moving very fast across the walls.
Dear me, out of thunderbolts, are we? Chickenwire sneered. Well, you know, I've never...
There was a creak. Chickenwire's face was a few inches from Bilious. The O-God saw his expression change. The man's eyes rolled. His lips said, Bilious risked stepping back. Chickenwire's sword didn't move. He stood there, trembling slightly, like a man who wants to turn around to see what's behind him but doesn't dare to, in case he does. As far as Bilious was concerned, it had just been a creak. He looked up at the thing on the landing above.
"Who put that there?" said Violet.
"It was just a wardrobe. Dark oak, bit of fancy woodwork glued on in an effort to disguise the undisguisable fact that it was just an upright box. It was a wardrobe.
You didn't, you know, try to cast a thunderbolt and go on a few letters too many?" she went on.
"Huh?" said Bilious, looking from the stricken man to the wardrobe. It was so ordinary, it was odd.
I mean, thunderbolts begin with T, and wardrobes...
Violet's lips moved silently. Part of Bilious thought, I'm attracted to a girl who actually has to shut down all other brain functions in order to think about the order of the letters of the alphabet. On the other hand, she's attracted to someone who's wearing a toga that looks as though a family of weasels have had a party in it, so maybe I'll stop this thought right here. But the major part of his brain thought, why is this man making little bubbling noises? It's just a wardrobe, for my sake.
No, no, mumbled Chicken Wire. I don't wanna.
The sword clanged to the floor. He took a step backwards up the stairs, but very slowly, as if he was doing it despite every effort his muscles could muster.
Don't want to do what? Said Violet.
Chicken Wire spun round. Bilious had never seen that happen before. People turned round quickly, yes, but Chicken Wire just revolved as if some giant hand had been placed on his head and twisted 180 degrees.
No, no, no,
Chicken Wire whined.
No,
he tottered up the steps.
You gotta help me,
he whispered.
What's the matter? Said Bilious. It's just a wardrobe, isn't it? It's for putting all your old clothes in so that there's no room for your new clothes.
The doors of the wardrobe swung open. Chicken Wire managed to thrust out his arms and grab the sides, and for a moment he stood quite still. Then he was pulled into the wardrobe in one sudden movement, and the doors slammed shut. The little brass key turned in the lock with a click.
We ought to get him out, said the O-God, running up the steps.
Why? Violet demanded. They are not very nice people. I know that one. When he brought me food, he made
suggestive comments.
Yes, but
Bilious hadn't ever seen a face like that outside of a mirror. Chicken Wire had looked very, very sick. He turned the key and opened the doors.
Oh, dear.
I don't want to see. I don't want to see, said Violet, looking over his shoulder.
Bilious reached down and picked up a pair of boots that stood neatly in the middle of the wardrobe's floor. Then he put them back carefully and walked round the wardrobe. It was plywood. The words Dratley and Sons, Phaedra Road, Ankh-Morpork, were stamped in one corner in faded ink.
Is it magic? Said Violet, nervously.
I don't know if something magic has the maker's name on it, said Bilious.
There are magic wardrobes, said Violet, nervously. If you go into them, you come out in a magic land.
Bilious looked at the boots again.
Yes, he said. I think I must tell you something, said Death.
Yes, I think you should, said Ridcully. I've got little devils running around the place eating socks and pencils. Earlier tonight we sobered up someone who thinks he's a god of hangovers, and half my wizards are trying to cheer up the cheerful fairy. We thought something must have happened to the Hogfather. We were right, right?
Hex was right, Arch-Chancellor,
Ponder corrected him.
Hex? What is Hex?
Hex thinks, that is, calculates, that there's been a big change in the nature of belief today,
said Ponder. He felt, he did not know why, that Death was probably not in favour of unliving things that thought.
Mr. Hex was remarkably astute. The Hogfather has been...
Death paused.
There is no sensible human word... Dead in a way, but not exactly. A god cannot be killed, never completely killed. He has been, shall we say, severely reduced.
Ye gods, said Ridcully, who'd want to kill off the old boy?
He has enemies.
What did he do? Miss a chimney?
Every living thing has enemies.
What, everything?
Yes, everything. Powerful enemies, but they have gone too far this time. Now they are using people.
Who are?
Those who think the universe should be a lot of rocks moving in curves. Have you ever heard of the auditors?
I suppose the bursar may have done.
Not auditors of money, auditors of reality. They think of life as a stain on the universe, a pestilence, messy, getting in the way.
In the way of what?
The efficient running of the universe.
I thought it was run for us. Well, for the Professor of Applied Anthropics, actually. But we're allowed to tag along, said Ridcully. He scratched his chin. And I could certainly run a marvellous university here if only we didn't have to have these damn students underfoot all the time.
Quite so.
They want to get rid of us?
They want you to be less... Damn, I've forgotten the word. Untruthful? The Hogfather is a symbol of this.
Death snapped his fingers, causing echoes to bounce off the walls, and added,
Wistful lying?
Untruthful? Said Redcully. Me? I'm as honest as the day is long. Yes, what is it this time?
Ponder had tugged at his robe, and now he whispered something in his ear. Redcully cleared his throat.
I am reminded that this is, in fact, the shortest day of the year, he said. However, this does not undermine the point that I just made, although I thank my colleague for his invaluable support and constant readiness to correct minor, if not downright trivial, errors. I am a remarkably truthful man, sir. Things said at university council meetings don't count.
I mean humanity in general. The act of telling the universe it is other than it is.
You've got me there, said Redcully. Anyway, why are you doing the job?
Someone must. It is vitally important. They must be seen and believed. Before dawn, there must be enough belief in the Hogfather.
Why? Said Redcully.
So that the sun will come up.
The two wizards gawped at him.
I seldom joke, said Death,
at which point there was a scream of horror.
That sounded like the purser, said Redcully, and he's been doing so well up to now.
The reason for the bursar's scream lay on the floor of his bedroom. It was a man. He was dead. No one alive had that kind of expression. Some of the other wizards had got there first. Redcully pushed his way through the crowd.
Ye gods, he said, what a face. He looks as though he died of fright. What happened?
Well, said the Dean, as far as I can tell, the bursar opened his wardrobe and found the man inside.
Really?
I wouldn't have said the poor old bursar was all that frightening. No, Arch-Chancellor, the corpse fell out on him.
The bursar was standing in the corner, wearing his old familiar expression of good-humoured concussion.
You all right, old fellow? Said Redcully. What's 11% of 1,276?
140.36,
said the bursar promptly.
Ah, right as rain, said Redcully cheerfully.
I don't see why, said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. Just because he can do things with numbers doesn't mean everything else is fine.
Doesn't need to be, said Redcully. Numbers is what he has to do. The poor chap might be slightly yo-yo, but I've been reading about it. He's one of these idiot servants.
Savant, said the Dean patiently. The word is savant, Redcully.
Whatever. Those chaps who can tell you what day of the week the first of Groon was 100 years ago.
Tuesday,
said the burster.
But can't tie their bootlaces, said Redcully.
What was a corpse doing in his wardrobe? And no one is to say not a lot, or anything tasteless like that. Haven't had a corpse in a wardrobe since that business with Arch-Chancellor Buckleby.
We all warned Buckleby that the lock was too stiff, said the Dean.
Just out of interest, why was the bursar fiddling with his wardrobe at this time of night? Said Redcully.
The wizards looked sheepish. We were playing sardines, Arch-Chancellor, said the Dean.
What's that?
It's like hide-and-seek, but when you find someone you have to squeeze in with them, said the Dean.
I just want to be clear about this, said Redcully. My senior wizards have spent the evening playing hide-and-seek.
Not the whole evening, said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. We played Grandmother's Footsteps and I Spy for quite a while, until the senior wrangler made a scene just because we wouldn't let him spell chandelier with an S.
Party games? You fellas?
The Dean sidled closer.
It's Miss Smith, he mumbled. When we don't join in, she bursts into tears.
Who's Miss Smith?
The cheerful fairy, said the lecturer in recent runes glumly. If you don't say yes to everything, her lip wobbles like a plate of jelly. It's unbearable.
We just joined in to stop her weeping, said the Dean. It's amazing how one woman can be so soggy. If we're not cheerful, she bursts into tears, said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. The senior wrangler's doing some juggling for her at the moment.
But he can't juggle. I think that's cheering her up a bit.
What you're telling me, then, is that my wizards are prancing round, playing children's games just to cheer up some dejected fairy?
Yes.
I thought you had to clap your hands and say you believed in them, said Ridcully. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's just for the little shiny ones, said the lecturer in recent runes, not for the ones in saggy cardigans with half a dozen hankies stuffed up their sleeves.
Ridcully looked at the corpse again.
Anyone know who he is? Looks a bit of a ruffian to me. And where's his boots, may I ask?
The dean took a small glass cube from his pocket and ran it over the corpse.
Quite a large thalmic reading, gentlemen, he said. I think he got here by magic.
He rummaged in the man's pockets and pulled out a handful of small white things.
Ugh, he said. Teeth, said Ridcully. Who goes around with a pocket full of teeth?
A very bad fighter, said the chair of indefinite studies. I'll go and get Modo to take the poor fellow away, shall I?
If we can get a reading off the thaumameter, perhaps Hex, Ridcully began. Now, Ridcully, said the dean, I really think there must be some problems that can be resolved without having to deal with that damn thinking mill.
Death looked up at Hex.
A machine for thinking?
Yes, sir, said Ponder Stibbons. You see, when you said, well, you see, Hex believes everything. But look, the sun really will come up, won't it? That's its job.
Leave us.
Ponder backed away and then scurried out of the room. The ants flowed along their tubes. Cogwheels spun. The big wheel with the sheep skulls on it creaked around slowly. A mouse squeaked somewhere in the works.
Well, said Death.
After a while, the pen began to write, plus, 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 big red lever time, plus, 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 query, plus, plus, plus.
No, they say you are a thinker. Extend logically the result of the human race ceasing to believe in the Hogfather. Will the sun come up? Answer.
It took several minutes. The wheels spun, the ants ran, the mouse squeaked. An egg timer came down on a spring. It bounced aimlessly for a while and then jerked back up again. Hex wrote, plus, 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 the sun will not come up, plus, plus, plus.
Correct. How may this be prevented? Answer.
Plus, 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 regular and consistent belief, plus, plus, plus.
Good. I have a task for you, thinking engine.
Plus, plus, plus. Yes, I am preparing an area of write-only memory, plus, plus, plus.
What is that?
Plus, 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 you would say, to know in your bones, plus, plus, plus.
Good. Here is your instruction. Believe in the Hogfather.
Plus, 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 yes, plus, plus, plus.
Do you believe? Answer.
Plus, 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 yes, plus, plus, plus.
Do you believe? Answer.
Plus, 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 yes, plus, plus, plus. There was a change in the assembled heap of pipes and tubes that was Hex. The big wheel creaked into a new position. From the other side of the wall came the hum of busy bees.
Good.
Death turned to leave the room, but stopped when Hex began to write furiously. He went back and looked at the emerging paper. Plus, 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 dear Hogfather, for Hogswatch, I want...
Oh, no! You can't write letter.
Death paused, and then said,
You can, can't you?
Plus, plus, plus. Yes, I am entitled, plus, plus, plus. Death waited until the pen had stopped and picked up the paper.
But you are a machine. Things have no desires. A doorknob wants nothing, even though it is a complex machine.
Plus, plus, plus. All things strive, plus, plus, plus.
You have a point, said Death.
He thought of tiny red petals in the black depths, and read to the end of the list.
I don't know what most of these things are. I don't think the sack will, either.
Plus, plus, plus. I regret this. Plus, plus, plus.
But we will do the best we can, said Death. Frankly, I shall be glad when tonight's over. It's much harder to give than to receive.
He rummaged in his sack.
Let me see. How old are you?
Susan crept up the stairs, one hand on the hilt of the sword. Ponder Stibbons had been worried to find himself, as a wizard, awaiting the arrival of the Hogfather. It's amazing how people define roles for themselves and put handcuffs on their experience, and are constantly surprised by the things a roulette universe spins at them. Here am I, they say, a mere wholesale fishmonger, at the controls of a giant airliner, because, as it turns out, all the crew had the coronation chicken. Who'd have thought it? Here am I, a housewife who merely went out this morning to bank the proceeds of the Playgroup Association's car boot sale, on the run with $1 million in stolen cash and a rather handsome man from the Battery Chickens Liberation Organisation. Amazing. Here am I, a perfectly ordinary hockey player, suddenly realising I'm the son of God with 500 devoted followers in a nice little commune in Empowerment, Southern California. Who'd have thought it? Here am I, thought Susan, a very practically minded governess, who can add up faster upside down than most people can the right way up, climbing up a tooth-shaped tower belonging to the Tooth Fairy and armed with a sword belonging to Death. Again! I wish 1 month, just 1 damn month, could go by without something like this happening to me. She could hear voices above her. Someone said something about a lock. She peered over the edge of the stairwell. It looked as though people had been camping out up there. There were boxes and sleeping rolls strewn around. A couple of men were sitting on boxes, watching a third man who was working on a door in one curved wall. One of the men was the biggest Susan had ever seen, one of those huge, fat men who contrived to indicate that a lot of the fat under their shapeless clothes is muscle. The other, "Hello," said a cheerful voice by her ear. "What's your name?" She made herself turn her head slowly. First, she saw the grey, glinting eye. Then the yellow-white one with the tiny dot of a pupil came into view. Around them was a friendly pink-and-white face topped by curly hair. It was actually quite pretty in a boyish sort of way, except that those mismatched eyes staring out of it suggested that it had been stolen from somewhere else. She started to move her hand, but the boy was there first, dragging the sword scabbard out of her belt. "Ah-ah," he chided, turning and fending her off as she tried to grab it. "Well, well, well, my word! White bone handle, rather tasteless skull and bone decoration. Death himself, second favourite weapon, am I right? Oh, my! This must be Hogswatch, and this must mean that you are Susan Stowe Hellet. Nobility, I'd bow," he added, dancing back, "but I'm afraid you'd do something dreadful."